This is the Space Dojo Show, a weekly podcast about all things JavaScript. You can find out more information at show.spacedojo.com. Enjoy the show. Welcome to the Space Dojo Show. I'm your host, Josh Owens, along with my co-host,
Ben Strahan. Hello, Joshy Poo. How you doing, sweetheart?
Good.
That was so awkward, huh?
Yeah, a little bit. And we've got a second co-host, Ramsey Lanier, right?
Yes.
Did I say that wrong?
Yes. It's Ramsey Lanier.
It's Ramslayer.
Ramslayer.
That's what it is, yep.
I totally
butchered it. That's my D&D character's name.
And the special guest this week is Wes. Welcome, Wes.
Thank you. Hello, everyone.
I've debated. How do you say your last name? Is it just Bose?
Nope. Boss. Yeah, it's Boss. It's Boss, like double S. It's about a 50-50 shot. Most people say, or I guess half of them say Bose, but it's Boss.
So the thing is, I always get names wrong. And so I just assume when I saw your name, I thought it was Boss. And I thought, oh, that's probably wrong.
That's wrong.
Terrible. Yeah. Nice. All right. Wrong again. Ramsey, for people that aren't familiar with you, where are you from? What do you do?
I'm a senior developer at a creative digital agency in DC. So I do mostly front-end development and increasingly more back-end stuff as well. The company is called Include, N-C-L-U-D.
What about you, Wes?
So I'm up here in Canada. I live in a city called Hamilton. It's just outside of Toronto. I do a whole bunch of stuff, but you can probably break it down into help companies build stuff with front-end technologies. I'm pretty much a full-stack JavaScript guy. And then I also teach people to build stuff with JavaScript and CSS and HTML. So I do teaching at a boot camp and a part-time class here in Toronto called HackerU. And then I also have a couple of products myself.
Nice. So you have React for Beginners. That's actually how I heard about you.
Yeah. I launched that one a couple of months ago, and it's been doing really well.
Nice. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, so I thought it'd be fun to get together and focus on React. And I know that, you know, this used to be the Meteor Club podcast, and the last time we talked about it, we kind of had a Meteor focus, and maybe this time we don't have a Meteor focus, and we just kind of talk about the ecosystem and how people can get started and, you know, just generally kind of debating the finer points of React as well.
Absolutely. Let's do it, man.
Sounds great.
Let's go.
All right. So what's React again?
Yeah.
Right. Just joking. Can I use Angular with it?
Wow. Wow. This is going to turn into the hot dog debate all over again.
Wow.
So Wes, some people might know you from your YouTube channel. Yep. And I remember back in the day, first hearing about you with your Flexbox video tutorials, yep, CSS. Were you primarily like a front-end guy at first?
I've always been doing front-end development. I've been doing it for over 10 years now. And I've done quite a bit of, in my early days, I did quite a bit of PHP and WordPress and Cake PHP and CodeIgniter and all that. But about 5 years ago, I kind of took a look at the landscape and saw JavaScript. And I'm like, it started to become more popular. And I started seeing it being deployed to like what Node was. Like I remember downloading the first version of Node ever. So I was like, I really need to just double down on JavaScript and front-end technology. So that's been my focus for the last couple of years.
I'm assuming that everyone kind of knows what React is here, so I won't dive into that stuff. But one thing that I was curious about is from the designer perspective, and Ramsey, like you're down for this too, because you got a similar history as Wes, right, Ramsey?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes.
What do you two guys see as the adoption for React with designers and front-end developers?
I've seen pretty good adoption here at work. We don't use React in anything in production just yet, but we've been doing a lot of side projects, and we have everything from UX to visual designers, information architects, and they all have basic fundamental knowledge of like HTML, CSS. You know, there was probably like a small learning curve when they saw JSX for the first time, but it's pretty similar to HTML. And then, as you know, I'm a I'm a big proponent of using CSS modules. So like, it's not really that different from regular web development, except for obviously like the logic and stuff that goes into React. But from a design standpoint, it hasn't been a challenge, I don't think.
Really? I don't know. I've been seeing a little bit of a hesitancy from designers.
Gosh, I wish I could remember where I saw this now, but there was like an analysis of Angular versus React. And the fact that Angular is more HTML centric and they layer in some JavaScript versus React is JavaScript centric and they layer in that HTML. And
right.
I don't know. I want to meet this mythical designer that has a problem with JSX. Like, I keep hearing like people are hesitant or worried about it, but I don't think it's a real issue. Like,
yeah. Well, I think what I see the barrier to entry is the tooling and actually writing quite a bit of JavaScript. And what I've seen in terms of designers picking up React is they're not going to start slinging Webpack and building their own module setup and writing all the code. But where they can do is they can just jump in. Once you give them an object or an array full of data, and they can understand that you can loop over things. You get this data, you can create your HTML with that. I think with Angular, it's much easier because they're more comfortable in their HTML file, and JSX doesn't have ng repeat or anything to do logic. So you do kind of have to brush up on your working with arrays. But
I would agree. I think probably the most confusing thing would be the lack of if, else, and while loops, having to use either calling functions inside the component or using ternary operators. And so once you've seen a ternary operator and you're like pretty comfortable with both sides of the equation, it's pretty easily repeatable. So maybe like a crash course day of like, this is basically how the logic is kind of working, in this component. I mean, I've definitely written some pretty gnarly components that have a lot of logic inside of them, and I can see how it might be confusing. But as I've been using React more and more, you learn to make smaller components and make it much more manageable, I think.
Very cool. So like Wes, outside of your React for Beginners, you do some in-person training.
Yeah.
And is that like training for people who are like brand new to web development?
Most of the people who take my courses are people who are within the first year of being introduced to web development. So I get to see a lot of the pain points. And I think that's the reason why a lot of my video series are doing so well, is because I pretty much just write down things that people say that are hard and explain those to be pretty simple for them.
In those classes, are you guys teaching React?
Not in that one. We don't have a React workshop just yet, but it's more focused around, like, we have a JavaScript course that I lead as well. It's more focused around fundamentals and understanding like what's the DOM and what are events. And regardless of what you're using, you need to understand that that's how JavaScript and the browser interact.
Do you think that like once they get past your class with JavaScript, and obviously they would know like HTML and CSS, do you think like React is something that like people would gravitate towards next? That's probably like a good stepping stone.
Yeah, I think once you're comfortable with the event system, once you're comfortable with manipulating and massaging data, it's one of the next steps. It's a bit of a harder step, I think, than picking up something like Angular. It's definitely, that's why I created this series, because you just need to know a couple more things to be able to get up and running. And then once you have it, it starts to work. And then I also see that it's making people a better JavaScript developers. It's really pushing people to learn better JavaScript, because like I see a lot of people who were, I don't mean to pick on Angular, I still really like it, but you see a lot of people who have been building Angular apps for a couple of years and their JavaScript skills haven't really gone that far, because there's a lot baked into that framework, right? And then as soon as people are picking up React, it just forces you to just write JavaScript at the end of the day.
That's a great point. I mean, my like ES 2015 skills have like really, really increased the past, 6 months or so, as I've gotten more and more into React. Maybe it's probably like a combination of using Webpack and all that stuff. But I mean, the main driving force was I wanted to use React. And so I just want to say that's a really great point.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Yeah. I think if you put yourself, and that comes back to like the designer or beginner or whatever you're talking about, is if you put yourself in a situation where you're pushed, it's amazing how quickly you can get up to speed and then push yourself a little bit more and more. And before you know it, in a year or two, you're in a really good spot with your JavaScript skills.
Do you find that when you're pushing yourself to learn React, there's a tendency to like over push yourself, and like all of a sudden people feel like they have to learn Redux, you know, they have to learn Flux, all that fun
stuff,
or Relay or Webpack. Like there's all the stuff that comes in on top of it.
Yeah. There's a lot of like decision anxiety around React because React is very small in what it does. And then if you want to do anything else, like go fetch data or do like one-way data binding and all this stuff, you need to pull in all these different things. And it's pretty overwhelming to look at all these possible things and nobody tells you just use this, just use the following five things. So yeah, I definitely think that that's there. And that's one of the reasons why I didn't put any Flux or anything into my series, just because like you don't need to know that off the head. You just need to know how React works and to really just grok the understanding of the ideas behind React.
Now I'm in your Slack group because I like purchased your course, and I got to say though, quickly getting in there, that's the first thing that's like requested of you in your Slack group.
Is what?
Is like Redux, right?
Oh yeah. Well, I'm working on a series right now because everyone finishes it and they go, okay, that was awesome. I understand it. Now what's next, right? Because they're hungry for more and they're willing to push themselves into it. And also like once you build an app or two in just regular React, you start to feel the pain points and where Redux or something comes along and solves that.
Also Redux, it might be nicer from someone who's just starting off web development and isn't used to non-functional programming, but Redux in itself, if you don't understand functional programming, is like really hard to kind of wrap your head around at first. I can definitely see why that's like number one on people's list after like just basic React.
Yeah,
it's kind of interesting because if you look at Redux itself, it's less than a year old, right? And so
yeah, not even a year old, yeah.
Yeah. So the idea for like Flux came out, I think, during React Conf last year, which was January of last year. It's still new to a lot of people. Like even the people that have created it are still kind of reworking it and rethinking ideas in it. You know, like you see Sagas coming out now and that kind of stuff. And I mean, there's a lot of ideas changing there. And I love seeing like Facebook hire Dan Abramoff, the guy that created Redux. So that's a good signal probably for the community that it's going to be it pretty much is the one at this point, but I find the whole thing kind of interesting to watch, like sitting over in the Meteor community and listening to JavaScript fatigue. It's like, well, we maybe don't have all these problems exactly. We have different ones, but
yeah.
That problem's always going to exist when you're working with stuff that's so new.
Mm-hmm.
I love it because it's like, I don't want to say high risk, high reward, but it's like you put in a lot of effort, like learning stuff, and it does change. But like when it gets working, you realize like how powerful it is. You're like, don't want to go back. I do like regular WordPress development sometimes during the day. And like even simple things, like I'll find myself using like const and let. I have to use var. Like just little silly things like that, which are like really minuscule, but then, you know,
to realize how awesome it is to be able to do things.
Now that brings up another point though. So gosh, such a pun, but React isn't in a Flux state where it's constantly changing and stuff like that. Right? Everyone hears this one too. Anyway, Wes, have you found that to be kind of like a headache with like having a larger course and like having to keep it up to date?
Yeah, it's changing fairly frequently, and all the modules are like, I was just about to record my next one and then there's a huge breaking change in React Router Redux. So I have to like put that on ice until that gets sorted out. But like people are they're really just figuring it out right now. So if we just stuck on what we knew 3 years ago or 2 years ago and said like, this is the way, then we wouldn't be as well off. So it's definitely frustrating, but It's just it's part of it's been selling really well because it's React. But as things start to change and as the next couple of versions of React come out, I'm gonna have to continue to be updating it.
Yeah, like I remember watching it, and I think in 2014 they kind of added the notion of higher order components.
Yeah.
Do you touch on that at all during your class?
No, not in this class, no.
Yeah.
It had just come out like a week after. And I'm pretty aggressive in pushing back on too much in my courses and in my teaching and things like that. Because yeah. Before you know it, you can start throwing high order components and flux and state and all these different things at people. And then they start to freak out. So I think one of the reasons people really like it is because I can hold back on some things that you can easily pick up once you understand the core of React.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree. I mean, to bring up JavaScript fatigue again, I guess. I mean, all of the JavaScript landscape keeps changing at a pace that is definitely frustrating for a teacher who's creating products that are almost static once they've been released. You know, I gave a Master and Meteor course the last time I gave it. They had just come out with template level subscriptions and people were switching to FlowRouter, and I haven't redone a class since then. And, you know, that class is out of date and people are like, when are you going to change? Are you going to switch to React? Like, they always want something new or like up to the minute, up to date.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely frustrating, but at the same time, it's why I'm able to like break into this. Like I've been doing videos for 3 or 4 years now, but there would already be videos on everything and I wouldn't be able to do that if it just stayed that way, right?
Yeah, that's true.
So like JavaScript fatigue introduces business opportunities, you're saying?
Yeah, so
for sure.
Fatigued business opportunity, I guess. And
we can manipulate this.
and even for like people coming into web development, it allows them to like just jump in and start running with ES6 and React and all that stuff. And you don't have to like learn Backbone and things like that. Right. So like, it also gives people an opportunity. Like some of the people in the chat room who are like pretty good at React have only been front end devs for like a year or two, but it's allowed them to just kind of take the newest thing and run with it.
Do you have like a boilerplate for them that they like just, like a repo that they clone and then you just...
Not really. So it starts with a file called main.js and there's nothing in there. And then I give them a Browserify and Gulp scripts and they just type Gulp and then we code the entire thing from there. So there's not much boilerplate other than the tooling, which is not a focus of the course at all.
Are people curious? Are they ever like, what does this stuff do that is going on behind the scenes?
Yeah, I talk a little bit about like what it's doing, and I talk a lot about modules and how we import them and export them, because that is new to most people who are coming from jQuery, where they just stick all their script tags in there. It's not new to people who've been doing Node, because we've had that for years, but they're pretty curious. And I think at one point I'll probably do a tooling course, but I'm not satisfied with how hard tooling is right now. And I think it's going to get a lot easier.
Yeah, it's a nightmare right now. I'm like working on trying to get Relay to work with like server-side rendering with Webpack.
Yeah, I once coded like an app just to get server-side rendering and hot reloading and all these things working. And like I think I had like 400 lines of code or something. Like that. It was bigger than my app to actually get it up and running. And I think that will change. So I think people, hopefully React will endorse a certain tooling chain and it will just work and you just type Webpack or whatever it is to get up and running.
That brings up an interesting thing. Like there is a lot of pain to get started. In the past, we talked about everything changing in React, or not everything, but it's changing as time goes on. It's not a 1.0 yet. Is it like a wise business decision for like larger companies to like integrate this? Should people like wait to learn React until like the dust settles a little bit? Or do you say like, now jump in now? Like Wes is going to say yes because he has to.
I can't. I mean, I can honestly see how it doesn't make sense for a lot of companies, especially if you either have to train your current developers who don't know it, or you have to hire new developers. That's expensive.
At the same time, like components offer like
So
a good team management.
Right. So you really have to like, if you have a large development team and you decide to do it, like you're just doing a cost benefit analysis at that point. You're like, well, how much are we currently spending time wise, you know, on maintaining our application, and how much is React really going to save us? And then that becomes a problem if you don't know, like, if no one there knows really how to use React, they just hear about it. Like, then they have to like do an investigation. Maybe you have to hire a consultant. It gets crazy.
Yeah, I think that's with any technology you pick up. If I were looking at building an application now, I would probably start building it in React. And the reason why is like, if you look at it 4 years down the road, you don't want to be regretting that you built it on some older outdated technology. And with the sort of the uptake that React has had in the last 6 months or so, I would say the industry is definitely going that way.
From a durability standpoint or whatever, I don't know if that's the right word, but I definitely don't think React is going to be going anywhere in the next couple of years. I'd be very surprised.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's at the core of one of the largest technology businesses in the world, right? And
right.
I think that kind of means that it's going to stick around for a long time. Like Rails is not even part of one of the largest tech businesses, but it's still around because they're kind of backing it with their own money.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard, you know, the Facebook argument is good, but you know, what about like Google's Polymer or something? Like that didn't really catch on, did it?
It hasn't, I think.
But I've messed around with it, but a different talk, but I still much prefer.
I still think that's slightly different, you know, than like Angular certainly did catch on. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that to me feels like a closer analogous kind of.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
I'm curious to hear what you guys think about projects starting up. You guys touched on it like, hey, like definitely like adopt React right now if you're starting a new project, because it's what you want to do if you're starting a project now, because in a year it's like going to be even more stable and everyone's going to be there. But I'm interested what you guys think about like smaller projects or weekend projects. Does React make sense for all apps?
Obviously, it doesn't make sense for all apps. But I mean, I have like a pretty decent sized component library that I've built myself. Not like, I haven't packaged them out or anything like that. But I can pretty much copy and paste or plug them in here and there and like get a lot of functionality. Like I've got like a registration form or like a login form component. And like, I just need to like copy a few things over from a project into a new one, and it works. Like, so if you have that already, then yeah, it's really fast. You know, if you have to start from scratch, then if you're like at a hackathon and you have like 6 hours or whatever, or in 24 hours, maybe it doesn't.
When you're excited about building something, it doesn't matter what you're building it in, because you can always go back and rewrite it. Just make it work and get your idea actually working. So if it's a weekend project or whatever, just if jQuery is what you feel most comfortable in and you can sling it in that, then go for it and you can come back. And the same thing goes with existing websites. If you have a huge existing website, which is a lot of apps and a lot of products where it's built on some like backend HTML that gets generated and then you sprinkle some jQuery on top, you can start just like kind of replacing just those small little components all throughout the website and slowly change the entire thing over.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty much exactly what Facebook did, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly what they're doing. I was wondering the other day, like at what point will Facebook not be rendered by PHP, where PHP is just their REST API or Relay API or whatever?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting point. I really do enjoy Atmosphere and being able to go find a package and pull it in and knowing that it can be like front end and back end. Is there anything outside of NPM that like will help you kind of comb through the components that are available, I guess, in the NPM ecosystem, but it gives you some kind of quality metric or anything like that?
There's react-components.com, which is it's pretty good, but I definitely think that's the kind of the place that I'll go to if I need a component for something, or I'll just ask around. There's like one called react.parts as well. and React.parts will give you number of GitHub stars and, okay. and whatnot. So like you can kind of get an idea for that, but you still need something that will clearly show that this is what you should use. And that's kind of the weird thing about React is that you can use anything you want. And some people don't like that. They just want to be told to use X, Y, and Z, right?
I don't know. This is a really interesting topic to me. I actually, a long time ago, registered a domain called like Plugin Hub, I think it was. And like the idea was to go in and look at package ecosystems and kind of give metrics on them. That stuff, I think, matters to some degree because as a developer, you don't want to pull in something that's abandoned or not being maintained. And like that's not always super obvious. You know, if you go into an ecosystem and like in Rails, they've switched standards on what the authentication system is several times. And, you know, you may stumble across a ton of blog articles on, you know, the original kind of authentication system everyone used. And like, it's out of date. It's not maintained. It might not even work with the latest Rails version. So, you know, I think that stuff's kind of important. And if something's popular, that's another signal that maybe it's decently maintained or easy to work with. So I like being able to see those stats before I make a choice, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's with anything from WordPress plugins to React ones. And generally what I'll do is I'll just go to NPM and check out, make sure that they're getting a decent amount of downloads every day. And then I'll also go to the issue tracker and just see, is it a mess? Is there tons of issues or like, how's it going? There's a, what's it called? There's a Discord, which is the React community got kicked off Slack because they were too big. So there's this chat room on Discord for React, and most big plugins will have their own chat room. So you can jump in there and see if there's 20 people in it or something, like at least 20 people care enough to log on and idle in that room.
I interrupted Ben. What was your question, Ben?
I was actually going to give Ramsey some slack for his noisy microphone.
Oh. he's muted now, so.
Yes.
I'm not speaking anymore.
Nice.
This is good stuff. On the component side, do you guys think like there's going to be an industry, a commercial industry formed around components for React in the future? Sometimes to like entice people to like get in more. Like if you think about it, if the industry like huddles around, I really think part of WordPress's success was like its professional themes and everything. And people would go there and be like, whoa, this looks so sexy. You know,
yeah,
is obviously good because it's so sexy and they just go for it.
Yeah, probably. Like we saw it in jQuery. There's like Wijmo and like big corporate companies. And then there's also like people on Code Canyon slinging $15 jQuery plugins. So I wouldn't be super surprised, but I generally think that the best stuff is usually open source and maintained by the community. And hopefully what we see from that is that the authors of those plugins get paid in consulting books, whatever, or like working at Facebook or whatever it is.
I would not at all be surprised if there becomes some marketplace for components, but I am 100% behind open source stuff. And I know like anything that I make, you know, whatever is always going to be open source.
Yeah. And I think another really nice model that I see quite a bit in the WordPress community is that like you get like the base package, which will take care of 95% of the people. And then you can like buy an upgrade or something like that for, and I'm almost always more than happy to pay whatever it is that the author is looking for, because that $100, $50, whatever I do to pay for that would be, it seems kind of weird, and it's kind of a touchy subject in open source, but I also just love to support authors who put in their time.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great point, because we had, Mike Parham on, and so he's from the Rails community, and we talked about this very topic before. You know, he's experimented a lot with charging for open source work, but he followed that same model that you were talking about, where, you know, he puts out Sidekick and you can download it and use it, and it works fine for anyone. But then he's got Sidekick Pro, which is a yearly license, and you get access to like higher end features that, I mean, you can absolutely go code it yourself, but at the same time, like, it's really just a dollar comparison, right? Like, what's your time worth and how much are you going to spend writing that versus what's the benefit you're going to get here? So,
yeah, exactly.
We touched on WordPress for a second. Do you think that WordPress's adoption of NPM and everything is going to be like driving React more?
I think so. It was big for me because my sort of audiences are like JavaScript, and my other audience is like WordPress, and they're fairly siloed. And when Matt Mullen like came out, I'm not sure if anyone knows this, but he at the State of Word, which is the big talk he gives every year, they announced that they rebuilt the entire WordPress.com dashboard in React. And then he said, your homework for this year is to learn React. And I cried tears of joy because I was like, those are my two audiences coming together. And
yeah, that's awesome.
It really kind of gave the WordPress community a bit of a kick in the pants. That's saying like, you actually need to start learning the stuff and start thinking of WordPress as your data source and not necessarily your templating engine.
This is a great segue for me to do a shameless plug for my project, because like that's exactly what I'm doing, but on the front end side of WordPress development with, because I use WordPress almost every day at work. Yeah, so I really wanted to be able to use React and like CSS modules and stuff with WordPress to make maintaining websites easier. And then GraphQL came out, you know, with Relay. And so like my project basically uses GraphQL and Relay to get data from a WordPress database and like use React components. So it's cool. Like there's definitely some like challenging issues. Like I mentioned earlier, server-side rendering is difficult. SEO is like a huge deal with WordPress. But yeah, it's been fun and really
so cool. So how does that work then? I don't mean to take over the show, but I'm really interested in, so how do you get GraphQL and WordPress and all that talking together?
I'm using something called SQLize, which you basically give it some connection settings and it basically reads your WordPress or any SQL database.
Oh, you connect right to the database.
Yeah. It basically will read your tables and you can create relationships between the tables. And then it gives you queries that return promises. And so in GraphQL, when you're writing a GraphQL schema in your resolve function, if you're familiar at all with GraphQL, in your resolve function, you're just writing like this SQLize query that returns a promise. And then you're using Relay to like pipe that through to your React components. So it's actually, I wrote an NPM module that actually, all you have to do is give it your WordPress connection settings. So basically exactly what you would put in your WP config file. Mm-hmm. And it like returns a pretty standard GraphQL schema.
That
you can do like, so you don't have to, you know, like if you don't want to have to write all that, like it basically just gives you import like I call it Word Express GraphQL schema. And you basically just use that with, you know, Relay router or whatever you want.
Okay, I think I did see this. Then, what's the point of if you're using WordPress at all? Then, is it because you have the admin interface for your?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, based on like any the node based CMSs that are out there, and WordPress's vast ecosystem, it made sense. I love the WordPress admin, and now that they have Calypso, it's like even Calypso's their node based thing that's built in React and all that stuff. My whole driving force behind like doing this project was because I wanted to use React and CSS modules. And so I was like, initially I thought about using the WordPress API, but of course, because I was using React, I was like, well, I should learn this new GraphQL thing. And so that goes back to like Ben's question about like when you start using React, do you go down this rabbit hole of learning all these newer technologies that play with it? And I guess in my case, the answer is yes.
It's a slow thing though, right?
Yeah. I mean,
or you could be force fed. You can just like dive into it for a whole week. You're in a cave for a whole week. You don't shave. You don't eat. Your family wonders where you are.
Yeah. If I didn't have a family, that would probably be me. Like I would just volunteer myself.
That's actually, I've been learning React this week. That's why I have this beard now.
That's why.
Yeah. And you're wearing the same shirt that you were wearing last week when we were recording?
Yeah, totally.
Just joking. That was one of my questions, was like, we all have families. Is there any like life hacks that you guys recommend for people with families and having to catch up with this JavaScript fatigue and learning React and everything?
Yeah, just ignore it.
Ignore the family?
I have a family and I'm always on top of it because it's mostly my job to stay up to date. But for the people that are building products full time for their companies, is just wait. Just like sit by the sidelines and wait for things to surface. It makes people really, really anxious when things keep changing and when they feel like they're falling behind and when you don't know what Relay and GraphQL and Redux and all these things are. The reality is like, just let it all settle down. We're all going to come to a consensus in a year or so on what's the best way to do this. And if you're not interested in wasting your time, just wait till it gets a little bit more streamlined and you can sort of start to pick it up from there. You don't have to always be on the cutting edge. We get cut every day by the cutting edge. Let us do the bleeding for you.
That's a good point. But to answer that question, as someone who wants to be on the cutting edge, it is very difficult. I have two children, and it's difficult to have a day job and do it. I mean, I guess the answer is I'm lucky I work at a pretty cool company that gives me, like, you know, we have like that 80-20 rule where, so I can work on some side projects at work, which is really nice. I have like a pretty long commute on public transit, so I can work during my commute, which is nice. I don't sleep very much, so I'll probably die when I'm 60. But just the important thing, though, I mean, is to try to stay healthy during all of this, like at least eating better. I've been really trying to do like eat better. And I've noticed like I just have more energy during the day, not eating like McDonald's, or, you know, crap every day. So that's a life hack. Yeah.
You hacked all of life in that.
There you go. Right there. my other tip would be just pick a project and see it through all the way. Often people get like, ooh, shiny object, ooh, shiny object, ooh. And then I think that's a majority of the people that take my course who just want to be told what to do. They want to be sat down and take 5 hours to learn something like that. And if you learn that way, and I think a lot of people do, is just pick something that you'd like to do and pick something that's going to be really fun. Don't make a to-do list because you're going to get bored of it. And just make something that you're really invested in and see it all the way through, and you'll be done and you'll feel a lot more confident in your skill coming up next time when you build something.
Yeah. And I would say too, like, you know, pick something not too hard either, right? Something okay, throwing away.
Yeah, don't be too ambitious. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the second part of that question is, though, when someone says, hey, I am going to like take it easy, I'm going to learn a little bit of React, try and keep my finger on the pulse a little bit so that when it does settle down, I can pick it up. Mm-hmm. What is the stuff that they need to learn beforehand, before they're picking up React? Like, obviously you need to know JavaScript, HTML, CSS, but they could ignore CSS modules, right?
Yes. Yeah,
you know, no,
Radium, all that stuff.
No, absolutely, of course. Yeah, of course you can. Yeah. I mean, use Bootstrap I don't use Bootstrap, but I'm sure there's like React Bootstrap out there.
Yeah, do you recommend that they have to like catch up on ECMAScript 2015?
No. If you don't, like, the nice thing about these things is you can sort of pepper them in as you start to learn them. You don't need to sit down and learn ES16 first or ES2015 first and then learn it. You can start to pepper it in as you go along, or you see little samples here and there and you can start to fold your own learning.
That's a good point too, because I think if you're going to pick up a React project, you're going to have to, if you do want to use ES2015, you're going to have to do something to compile it down and make it work in the browser. So, you know, that would likely add another layer of complication.
Yeah. Well, with any React that you're doing this day, you pretty much need a build step, just because the JSX can't be done in the browser anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So you do need some sort of a build step, or you need to use like one of these React online editors.
That's like the biggest hurdle probably for anybody is the actual, you know, getting Babel and whatever you're using, Browserify or whatnot. Yeah. And like, if you don't know where to look, I mean, you don't even know what to, you don't, you probably don't even know how to Google Webpack or Google Babel or know even know what Babel is. And then you're looking through the Babel documentation, which if you know JavaScript and you're familiar with it, the documentation is really great. But if you're coming in with a blank slate,
it's like, oh, what do I use? What's this Webpack thing? I thought Gulp was the thing, you know?
Yeah.
Everyone's
it's such a bummer when you just want to have some fun and you probably have 3 hours on a weekend to learn something. And
all 3 hours go to Webpack.
Yeah, you piss it away on that, right? So, yeah, that's exactly why I start off my tutorial with tooling, because it's no fun to get stuck in that. You just want to get learning how React works and build some fun stuff.
Yeah. Now, is this a case for Meteor, you guys?
Yep. So here's the thing I'll say. If tooling bums you out, then yeah, probably it is a case for Meteor. If it doesn't bum you out, or you enjoy that, or Webpack configs get you excited when you wake up in the morning, like absolutely, like go do something else. Don't use Meteor. Or frankly, you want to be on the most bleeding cutting edge you can be, then yeah, like you probably be doing your own tooling and trying to figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. Like that's the whole thing with Meteor, is like it provides this happy path and it's just enough cutting edge that it satisfies people, but there's always like that push. It's like, no, we want to be completely on the cutting edge, and it's not like that. Like you got to roll your own then.
Like you also look at things like Ember, and Ember is cutting edge and it works for them because they have this nice tool that allows people to actually get to writing software rather than muck around with tooling.
Ember.
I mean, I've said this probably every time I talk about using Webpack, but to a Meteor audience, like if it wasn't for Meteor, I wouldn't be like at where I am now. Like Meteor gave me the like ability to get in doing full stack JavaScript development without worrying how to set up like a node server or use Express and all this stuff. And then once I like got that working, I was like, oh, well, I want to know how this works, you know, 2 years after using Meteor or whatever. So yeah, Meteor's great.
Yay, Meteor. Ben's always pro Meteor.
Right. Yeah. By the way, plug, everyone watch the Transmission podcast.
What's that?
Transmission podcast? It's like the coolest Transmission podcast ever. So everyone wanted to know what's going down in the secret walls of MDG and everything, which is Meteor Development Group.
Yeah, you did what my kids do there.
I find my way in there. I'd be like, yo, let's do a show directly with some core developers over there.
Yeah.
So that's what we do. Heck yeah. I'm Barbara Walters of the Meteor community.
MDG.
Heck yeah. Let's do some final thoughts on React and everything. I'm curious about our guests and everything. Like, what does 2016, the remaining part of 2016, hold for you guys?
Well, I'll start that off. I'm putting out a whole bunch more content, both free and paid ones. So a lot of it will be on React, but quite a bit more on doing some stuff on just vanilla JavaScript. So people that just want to get better at just JavaScript without anything else. I don't know, just a whole bunch more training and hopefully some stuff around the business side of it as well, teaching people and sharing what I've learned along this marketing journey.
Very interesting. I got a quick question off that.
Yeah.
How do you determine when training should be a premium training course and when it should be free? Because you do have a pretty powerful YouTube presence.
I guess it's just what I think people will pay for and what I think people will sign up for, because my free ones you need to sign up for, and that is huge for me for driving sales to the paid ones. So if there's something like the Flexbox one was a no-brainer, because everybody's going to need to learn how to do Flexbox. It's not going to change. It's done. So if I can create this kick-ass Flexbox one, and I did, then the next 4 or 5 years, it's going to be pulling in lots of traffic that will drive people to my paid ones. So I'm pretty focused on just building the audience right now, and not super concerned about the making money from it, because I know that will follow with the audience.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think you and I are pretty close in the directions we're heading this year.
Oh, we should meet up.
Yeah. I've got more content coming out and whatnot around like the training content. And you know, it's funny too. Like, you never really know what's going to be a hit. Like, I did this terrible video for, I gave a great talk, but the video recording was really bad for O'Reilly for like an online thing they did. And I got the video afterwards and I just thought, it's done. Like, it was out there free. Or I think people paid for it. I don't know. Maybe. But I tossed it up on YouTube, and like, that's my most viewed video last year on YouTube was that one. And I would have never guessed like that would have been the one, but go figure. What about you, Ramsey?
Yeah, Mr. Slayer, what's up?
I am going to continue fighting the good fight, trying to get WordPress development with Node and React. I started out as a whim. Like, I was just like, see how far I could get. And then like, I wrote a couple Medium articles, and I now, like, it's got like 800 stars on GitHub. It's gone crazy, like way more than I thought it would. And it really seems like it would be useful to people. And people have been asking like a lot of questions on GitHub issues and sending me DMs on Twitter and all sorts of stuff. So probably just going to keep on working on that. Also, Reruled, I'm trying to get that done by Spacecamp. So nice. I have a good amount of time.
So we can all look at your changed up set of rules when we're drunk and playing.
Yeah, exactly.
All the games.
My Settlers of Catan rules.
Yeah.
I like really applaud you guys for doing your trainings and stuff. Like, that's really awesome. I don't think I would have I don't think I have the patience. I'm not like the kind of person that can do that. So it's cool that you guys have that ability.
Yeah. How long does it take to like produce? Like, what outcomes is a 10-minute video? How much time planning, producing, sampling, recording, editing?
The Flexbox one, which is about 2.5 hours of content, took 60-80 hours. And then the React one was well over 200. Wow. That's a lot of work.
Yeah. I didn't really track it very closely, but like the Mastering Media class, I know I gave like 6 times last year. So I generally try to cheat and I'll do a live class and I'll record it. I get people to pay me to do the live class. So they're like my guinea pigs and they'll ask questions and that kind of stuff. So I'd probably say like that 8-hour course, I probably put somewhere around 70 to 80 hours into getting it all done.
That's like some trainer foo right there, man.
Yeah, don't tell anyone.
That's so a lot meta. Of the work is just prepping the content and making sure that it's good. Like, a big part of the React series for me was building the app before I even did the course and making sure that it followed.
Yeah, like if a video looks good, chances are someone's just looking at code as they're doing it, right? Like, I've got 2 screens and I keep my like master code up on the screen no one can see, and like I'm going along and explaining as I'm like typing, and sometimes I'll paste things in, but
awesome. All right. So everyone at this round table, I'd assume that you guys recommend people learning React over Angular too.
Yes.
Yeah. Whatever works for you. I really like Angular as well. I just,
Wes, that's such a politician answer right there.
Yeah. No, like honestly, I really don't care. There's nothing that you can build. It's not like React is going to let you build something that can't build in any other framework. Yeah. I really like React and I think it's great, but you should do your own investigative work and see what works for you.
So if people want to follow you on Twitter, what do they do? Where are you at?
I'm at WesBoss, WESBOS.
And I am at Very Bad Hello.
Very Bad Hello. Nice.
Yes.
Awesome.
You just gained a follower.
What? Where's Ben? Where's your Twitter?
Come on, mine?
Low-Benster.
Low-Dash.
BENSTR.
Or underscore for those.
Underscore. Import underscore from
there. Oh, I see. Yes. Underbar.
I already pressured Wes into following you.
Nice.
It's okay, I filtered it.
Why is there an underscore in front of your Twitter handle? Are you like a private function or something?
No, it's because I'm Benster everywhere. It's the first three of my first and last name.
But someone took it.
Some dude in China that only's done two tweets in the last decade.
That's the worst.
Isn't that the worst?
First world problems.
So it's like underscore, I figured that's the developer way of doing it. And if I was a politician, I would do the real Benster, but I don't want to be like that.
You have to have at least like 10,000 to 20,000 followers before you put
real.
Real. Yeah. Yeah.
Or at least be like verified.
Yeah, verified. There you go.
All right, guys. Well, I want to say thank you for coming on the show. I know Ben's got a meeting he's got to get off to. So.
All right, team. Thank you so much. This was awesome talk.
Yes.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.
Yeah. And we'll see you next time. We're going to have Richard Feldman from Elm Lang on, and we're going to be talking about Elm. So I'm super excited about that.
Functional growth. Okay.
All right. Yay. See you next time.
See ya.
This has been a Space Dojo production. You can find out more information about Space Dojo at spacedojo.com. It's easy to join the mailing list and stay in the loop. That's SpaceDojo.com.